Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, we are just a few days past that really tough loss. Notre Dame 27-24 in the college football semifinals. Where are you emotionally? Are you over it yet?
No, it still hurts. It's still in mourning. I just think back what it must be like for the guys on the team. You know, they work hard for this. This is their life's work and the hours and the weight and the dedication. So, you know, I think as bad as I feel, it's probably only a fraction of what most of those guys involved in the program feel. I can't imagine a worse loss, just the way it happened. It's those close ones, you know, looking back, when you get older, that really stick with you. A few plays here, a few plays there, what could have been. And you sort of realize, you know, as you're older, that, you know, you don't get that many opportunities in life to do something special. So, you know, maybe for some of the guys, it doesn't sting as much. But, you know, I know as it ages, at least in terms of my career, you know, I still remember these games 25 years ago when I get together with my friends about what if. So I suspect, unfortunately, it may be that way for them.
And I feel bad for Drew Aller, and we'll get into his play a little bit more later on. But what I know of him, you know, he cares deeply. He hurts more than anybody else over that interception. And he didn't play well the rest of the game either. So, you know, he's taking it tough. And, you know, James Franklin as a coach, this is as close as he's gotten. And, you know, if you're a big time college football coach, it's about winning a national championship. And for him, this was a realistic opportunity. And I walk away from that game feeling like Penn State actually was the better team, the more talented. And I know shoulda, coulda, woulda, but if you're James Franklin, you got to feel like, boy, you let that one slip through your hands.
Yeah, it's a missed opportunity. And I think with respect to Franklin, you know, look, I thought they coached well enough to win. There's some coaching decisions I look back on and say, you know, there were some mistakes. We could talk about that. But, you know, the big game James moniker, you know, I think unfortunately, because you have to look at the body of work. It's what, his 11th season. And I think there are games where he could put on more coaching decisions and maybe some personnel decisions. You know, guys that he was playing at quarterback, maybe he should have been playing somebody else. We can talk about that in hindsight in terms of how he's gotten his reputation. And the record is what it is. I think the Wall Street Journal had an article the day of the game that said, you know, the coach that can win all the games except the ones that matter. And that may be harsh, but, you know, at the end of the day, Penn State was up 10 points. They had a double-digit lead, and unfortunately, they couldn't come away with the win. So I don't know that that narrative's going away. Unfortunately, I think there's a new narrative that's coming out, and they've made a game, you know, big game Drew, and you're looking at his record in big games, also in the playoffs. You know, outside a couple throws against Boise State, which is Group of Five competition, Aller's play's been, to average at best, that's probably charitable, to be honest. And I know there's probably some blame at the wide receivers, but regardless, you know, the game ended the way it did. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, Aller and Franklin feel bad, but, you know, part of these roles, whether it's a head coach at Penn State, whether it's being the quarterback at Penn State, you sort of have to understand what the, I guess, focus and the media attention comes with that. They're both compensated, I think, fairly well. Obviously, Franklin, as we know, he gets paid. If Bo Prabula is getting $1.5 million to go to Missouri, I'm sure Aller's probably getting more than that. I'm curious as to who's going to want to donate to that for NIL after what they've seen in these playoff games, particularly that last throw. But, yeah, it is what it is.
Well, a few things. With James Franklin, I've always had a difficult time with the narrative and even, you know, the Wall Street Journal article where he gets nailed with the 1-14 record against top five teams. I would venture to guess that most teams have a similar kind of record against top five teams. By definition, top five teams are usually undefeated or have one loss. And if you beat them, they wouldn't be top five teams anymore. So it's almost by definition. Now, where I have an issue with James and his teams and in these games, it's they've been in position to win them. And it's the double-digit leads against Ohio State that we saw, even in the fourth quarter. This, as recently as this season, we saw Penn State with a 10-0 lead at home against Ohio State. This Notre Dame game, a 10-0 lead. And it was early, and I don't want to say they blew the game. That's not a fair assessment of it. But you kind of like your team's chances when they're up by double digits, no matter what point in the game it is.
Right. And I think, you know, you're talking about would any program in terms of the top five record, what would it be? Well, I guess my counter to that would be how many times were those other programs have double-digit leads that they squandered? And unfortunately, that's sort of becoming a thing. But again, coaching generally, I thought they coached well enough to win. You know, we talk about, again, the areas where I thought they – I would disagree. I guess when I sort of look at that on offense, you know, in terms of what Kotelniki did, he made the right call on that field goal. It ended up being a field goal. I mean, Singleton's wide open. Allard just missed the throw. And people are saying, well, he could come back. Look, that's a lot easier said than done. I mean, I played tight end in offense. All I'm saying is that when you're trying to get out to the flat, that's a low throw to try to come back to the ball when all your momentum's going the other way, that is very difficult to do. And if you try to do that, that kills your momentum. You probably don't get in the end zone. I mean, that's as easy a throw as you're ever going to get from Allard. So that's really on him. I thought the third down efficiency was pretty poor for Penn State offensively, you know, moving forward during the game. So, like, you give up 4 points by kicking a field goal as opposed to getting a touchdown. You sort of don't make the best of your opportunities on third down later on. Passing game was bad. It was just bad. I'm not even talking about the interception there at the end of the game. So, you know, that was disappointing. I was sort of hoping that maybe Kotelniki might scheme some of these guys open. You know, I didn't really see that. And then I guess from the coaching side of defensive standpoint, I thought they played pretty well. I thought they conceded that field goal at the end of the first half when they knocked out Leonard. And the second quarterback comes in for Notre Dame, actually starts moving the ball. I thought playing a little soft. I thought pass defense overall, you know, was a little bit of a concern. There were too many times, like second and long or third and long, where Penn State defenders there, and yeah, they're going to get him for a loss or a gain of a couple, and the guy gets a few yards after. So this poor tackling, it started to catch up with them, and you saw it here in this game where Notre Dame was much better on third down, particularly in that second half. I mentioned, I think last week, my concern was that Notre Dame would, you know, run the ball pretty effectively against Penn State. That didn't happen in the first half. It did happen that first drive in the third quarter. I thought Allen was slow to make some adjustments because you saw what was going on there. It wouldn't have taken much to take a timeout and try to address that. So I guess that would be my critique of that. The two guys fell down on the play. I mean, that's a fluke thing. I don't fault them for that. I'm sure they feel bad, but you know, stuff like that happens. The defense did give the offense a chance to win the game at the end of the fourth quarter. You know, the offense could have had that drive after Notre Dame got that fluke touchdown and just ended it on their own terms by having a 5 or 6 minute drive. They didn't. So I think that was a concern. And then the decision to be aggressive with Allard at the end of the game. I know it's easier to say in hindsight, but Allard wasn't playing well the entire game. I mean, he had two interceptions, got called back. I think those were the right calls that the officials made. I thought overall the officials were pretty consistent with the way they were calling the game. I thought you saw that in both the pass interference calls there. But Allard did not play well this playoffs, all three games. He just did not. So earlier in the season, we were trying to press, you know, at the end of a half or something and throwing the ball. Well, okay, maybe you had some idea that this guy was performing well, this guy being Allard. Like, he wasn't. And so that risk-reward analysis where he has been off all game, whether or not him combination receivers giving him opening. So for the last minute, you're going to somehow assume, ignore the entire 59 minutes before that, that this guy is going to deliver this win. I don't know. To me, again, it's easier to say in hindsight, but I'm not sure I agree with that decision.
Well, I do think there's a lot of hindsight to that one. I've been very much a Drew Allard backer, and I will say this one's on him. Okay, I feel bad for him. I know he feels really bad, but if you're going to make an honest analysis of this game, much of it is on Drew Allard. You brought up the pass to Nick Singleton that obviously would have been a touchdown. He threw it behind Nick Singleton. All his momentum, and is going the different way while looking back. That's very difficult, adds to the difficulty in coming back for that ball. Is it possible he could have caught it? Yeah, but that's not on him. In my mind, that was on Drew Aller totally and completely. And he played poorly, I'll say, most of the game. Now, there was a point in the second half, I believe, where he had six straight completions. And I think in his body of work this season, we saw many games when, and I've said this a lot this season, when it was put on Drew Aller, he typically came through. When it was a two-minute offense at the end of the first half, when it was you're down a couple touchdowns to USC, you know, he was able to perform and get it done. So when that last possession that ended in his interception happened, at the time, I remember saying to myself, you got to go for it. You have a chance to win, play to win. And I feel like if they had just gone into a shell and said, essentially, we're going to play for overtime, and they lost that game, I would have been very critical. And I think everybody would have done that hindsight thing. Here, that was a case where you have a quarterback in Drew Aller. The one thing, and I know there were the couple interceptions earlier in this game, that I think at least one of them was due to the, you know, pass interference caused the issue. But this is a Drew Aller who does not throw a lot of interceptions historically. He doesn't make those kind of mistakes often. So I know Greg McElroy, who was calling the game, he got a lot of heat for his assessment. But to be honest with you, Steve, as he's saying it, I'm going, yeah, I would be saying the same thing. And I did believe that.
Yeah, you have to look at how a guy's playing in that moment, that game. You know, Aller just was not performing well in that game. So the idea that somehow he's going to turn it on there at the end, again, it's easier to say this in hindsight. What I was thinking at the time is run the ball and just get to overtime. Also, that interception, correct me, I don't believe that was third down.
I don't think it was.
So again, just going back to Aller, at this point, you have two seasons under your belt, third year in the program. I don't know. You got to know where you are. I know we're in agreement.
Dumb mistake. It was a dumb mistake. And I believe what he said after the game was he was literally he was gone through his progressions and he knew his receiver wasn't open. He was literally trying to throw it away. As he put it, he was trying to dirt it. Didn't work, Drew. All right. We got lots more to go. Stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. We are still going over that Penn State-Notre Dame game. It still hurts. It really does, but we need to go through it. And what was interesting, and I'm not saying anything earth-shattering here, Steve, when I say pretty much any football game that's not a blowout, you could pick out, you could identify three or four plays that the game turned on. But this one was especially the case. I just want to hear your thoughts on it. We already talked about the pass to Nick Singleton. We had the Cam Miller and another DB falling down, and that was Notre Dame's biggest play of the game. You had also the fumble where I didn't realize it at the time that it was Abdul Carter was the guy who was right there for it. I was already saying, Penn State got it. The Penn State player had it. It went to him. He went, fell on it. I don't know if his shoulder issue was part of the problem or if it's just that random. You know, you can't get on the guy for not getting a fumble recovery, but that was the second one. There was also when the backup quarterback was in, when he was stripped of the ball, and it becomes random, and you don't get those recoveries. Those are absolutely huge. And then obviously the last interception by Drew Aller, which was, that's a self-inflicted wound. It's all on him. But you had that handful of plays. They were the difference in this game.
Yeah, in a close game, unfortunately, that's often what it comes down to. You know, that's the one thing that jumped at me at the beginning was Penn State had a really good first drive. And it was third and short, and 71 jumped off sides. And that cost them. Now, look, you look back in hindsight, you know, what could have been? You know, might they have continued on had that not happened? Again, had you gotten that 4 points? Had you won that coin toss at the beginning of the game where you're not kicking the ball back to, I mean, Notre Dame? These are the things that sort of, I think, you know, you look back on. That said, you know, Penn State made some great plays too. I think it was Wheatley that had the first interception.
Yeah,
and that play by Denai Dennis Sutton. I mean, look, I thought the defense played really well, and I think you got really terrific plays. Unfortunately, you know, the outcome is what it is, sort of like reminiscent of Saquon Barkley's game against USC there in the Rose Bowl. But, you know, I thought Denai Dennis Sutton played really well, and that outstanding interception, that'll make him a lot of money on Sunday, whether it's this year or next year. Hopefully he'll come back, but we'll see about that. I wouldn't blame him if he left. And Abdul Carter, there were a lot of comparisons to him to Michael Parsons, and I give Carter a lot of credit for playing with a separated shoulder. I think that's what he had. You know, Parsons didn't even play his last season there at Penn State. And, you know, I sort of will always kind of hold that against him as a Penn State fan, to be honest. You know, Carter, to step up when your team needs you like that and play. Now, you're right. Maybe not having a separated shoulder is not going to help you get that fumble, but I thought he really – with that, if anybody's ever had something like that, let me tell you, it's really painful. And for him to play as well as he did, as hard as he did, and I think it hurt him a little bit in the sense that because of where the shoulder was, he had to sort of rush on the right side of the offense, the left side of the defense, which means the quarterback can see where he's coming, as opposed to the blind side where Carter's speed and agility can really make a difference. I thought it was also effective as a spy. So again, I thought that was a really good, you know, performance by him. The offensive line, you know, since we're handing out praise, something I don't always do, they exceeded my expectations. You know, one of the reasons when I picked the game last week, I think I said 28-20 Penn State was my prediction. Obviously, if you get the touchdown as opposed to the field goal, Penn State's at 28 points. Allen doesn't throw that interception. You're at 24. This guy doesn't fall down. They're at 17. So you're not going to nitpick about that. I thought Leonard would throw one interception. He threw two. But I had Aller throwing three touchdown passes. Obviously, that was a terrible pick. But part of the reason I did that was I thought Penn State would struggle to run the ball more than they did, and they didn't. And kudos to not only the offensive line, but Nick Singleton, Katron Allen. I'm curious to see whether those guys are coming back next year. But I really thought they played well. And the offensive line gave Aller a lot of time to throw. Was he only sacked one time? You know, I thought the team played well enough to win. I outlined some of the some minor criticisms of the coaching staff, but overall they coached well enough to win. I think Penn State won the turnover battle too, because Leonard had the two interceptions and Aller only had the one. So it's unfortunate. You know, Notre Dame got a lot of breaks with the way the ball bounces. It's like life, you know, it just bounces funny ways sometimes. Unfortunately, it was Notre Dame's luck of the Irish, I guess, that night, which is tough to say out loud, but I guess now I'm just sort of rambling and going through the game again. But
yes, you are. All right. Well, let's highlight a few of the things that you brought up. Let's talk about that offensive performance. And first of all, with Drew Aller, you brought up the concern that just like it's Big Game James, Drew Aller's going to have to start wearing that also. He didn't play well in his first year as a starter against Michigan and Ohio State. And again, this year, you know, the loss to Ohio State, there were some good things against Oregon, but still, you know, he wasn't that 70% passer the way he was the rest of the season. SMU, it was terribly cold and that affected everybody. I'll give a pass there. But again, against Boise State, there were some very good, they were NFL-type throws. But again, overall, not great. And in this game especially, he was not good. So that was part of it. And what's interesting is I think we all know he could play better than he did. But even with that said, there were other elements of this offense. And this offensive line, through the playoffs, they've just been playing so well. You know, the Oregon game, even though they lost, they played well through the first couple playoff games. And it also coincides with how well the running backs have been playing these last several games. That's been particularly special. Now, you mentioned both running backs are going to have a decision to make about coming back. But if even one of them comes back, and I feel like, and I'd like to get your thought on this, but it feels like this offensive line has really turned a corner. There was a time a couple of years ago that was the biggest concern on this team. I don't have that concern anymore, and I feel pretty good about them going into next season also, Steve.
I do too. They have a lot of guys returning on the offensive line. Give Troutwine some real credit there in developing that. When you're pushing Notre Dame around, you're pushing a pretty quality defensive front around. That's what we really hadn't seen, and that's where I was a little skeptical coming into this game, and I'm glad that they exceeded my expectations. What I can't help but wonder is, had Bo Prabula stayed, in that game, you start running that Prabula package, would that running game have been even more effective? You know, we get to the end of the game, knowing that Aller's sort of struggling, they've relied more on him, just recognizing that the passing game was, again, candidly, it was struggling. We won't know, and you can't fault Franklin for playing a guy who's not on the team. Reflecting on the game, I just started wondering, well, given how good the running game was going, how much better it would have been if you had Prabula there as that legitimate sort of dual threat guy. And I think that's one of the limitations you see with Aller too. You look at Notre Dame's quarterback, the guy's not great. He's not a great quarterback. He's mobile enough. He's elusive enough. And that just gives you so much more, particularly on the short yardage and making it difficult for defenders to defend. I know Aller can make a lot of throws. It's just, I think, more of an issue of consistency. Does he do it all the time? And the trade-off there is you're giving up a lot in terms of having to worry in those short yardage situations about a mobile quarterback.
Well, I don't know if they would have put him in at the end of the game. I don't know if there's been a game this year where they said, well, Drew Aller isn't playing particularly well. We'll put in Bo. They haven't done it before, so I'm not sure they would do it there. Where I wonder if he could have made a difference was that where the first drive that they were inside the 10, where it ended up, yes, they should have scored the touchdown anyway. Drew Aller threw a poor pass to Singleton, but I wonder if they would have played that differently if Bo Prabula were available.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, unfortunately, we'll never know. But I wonder if that's an opportunity for Brunkenmeyer. Are they going to try to use him more next year the way they did Prabula to get him reps? I'm not sure.
It would be interesting to see, and that's a question for next season. We're talking on the offensive side of the ball, that performance. We've dodged it until now, Steve, but the wide receiver play, or they were non-existent. And it leads me to wonder how much – is it just they are that incapable of getting open? Is it Drew Aller not having the same kind of confidence in them that he does, say, in Tyler Warren, which is kind of understandable. You've got this all-world tight end. What is it? How much of it is this? How much of it is that?
Well, I think with the wide receivers, where I struggle is – these guys are highly recruited guys coming out of school. I know they may not be the top five-star guys, but Franklin does a good job assessing. He'd be a great NFL GM, to be honest, the way he's able to sort of assess guys and puts a big priority on size and speed. Basically, you know, the guy's doing that, we're going to coach you up once you come here. He had some success early in his tenure with developing receivers, but that's really just fallen off. And so it's just hard for me to see, are these guys really just that bad? Can you not coach them in terms of just executing the routes? Because they have the intangible, the speed, the size. I mean, they have all the fundamentals. Why aren't they being developed? And then I go back to Kotelniki. I mean, we're sort of told is, hey, this guy's going to be so creative. Don't worry about it. These guys are going to be wide open. I haven't really seen that in the playoff games.
No, we haven't seen it at all. And that's why I question, I feel like, you know, you have Trey Wallace, who has so many tools. He really very, very athletic. He could go up and get the ball, that kind of thing. Omari Evans, he's the speed guy. I'm with you. I feel like, are they not, what is it that's the development part of it versus what is it that maybe they don't scheme it or look to them? And I think some of that's on Kotelniki. I think some of it, like I said, is on Drew Aller. He doesn't hesitate to throw the ball to Tyler Warren in tight situations. He seems hesitant to go to these other guys, though.
Well, like you said, I mean, Warren's, what, 6'6", 260, and can jump. So he's going to win probably 80% of the 50-50 balls, and the ones he doesn't win are probably going to be incomplete. I don't know what happens in practice in terms of how many of these guys go up to get the ball. I haven't really seen any of them do it in the game. So maybe there's some reason that Aller just doesn't have the confidence in them. I guess that's my fear is next year is, you know, where's the receiver help coming from? I know there's been some transfer portal additions, but I don't really see a big-name guy coming in here. And Franklin's done a pretty good job in the portal, I think, in bringing guys in that have made contributions. One exception to that has been the receiver position. You know, I mean, Fleming, let's just be honest, he didn't really work out this season as hoped, and some of the other guys prior to him.
All right, we've been looking at the offense. When we come back, I want to talk to you some defense. Steve, we'll do that right after this break.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We're talking about Penn State football after that very disappointing loss to Notre Dame the other day. Steve, we wrapped up quarter number two talking about the performance on offense. Let's go to the other side of the ball. I know we talked about it a little bit, but I still want to talk about Abdul Carter. It was, and I know this kind of word gets thrown around way too much, but I'm going to call it a heroic performance. Playing with the shoulder injury, and you know he's going to get hit there every play. You know, that's part of it. He's on the line. He's going to get hit there as much as they tried to protect him, but that shoulder by rushing from the side where he wouldn't have to have as much contact with it. But this is a guy who's going to be probably a top five pick in the NFL draft. He has nothing left to prove. Nothing. Okay. He did not have to go out there and nobody would have questioned it. And not only did he go out there, but that was a heck of a performance. If there were national college football fans who didn't know who Abdul Carter was, they know who he is now.
Yeah, if I'm an NFL GM and I see guys willing to do that for my college teammates, I mean, to me, that's attractive. And again, I just can't contrast that enough with Micah Parsons, who just didn't even play his last season. So Carter's stock, in my opinion, went up tremendously from that. It was already pretty high. I think where Carter has gotten better, again, I expressed some concern, would he be effective against the run? Just this was an adjustment to him. You know, his strengths obviously are rushing the passer, given his speed. But he has improved in that area. And for him to play as well as he did against a team like Notre Dame, who runs the ball pretty effectively with one arm, you know, I agree. It's nothing short of heroic. And, you know, had Penn State win, you know, the narratives are different. But my guess is, you know, you would have probably seen more even national attention paid to that.
The other part of it with Abdul Carter, which I think is important, if you recall, back at the start of this season, it wasn't going great for him at defensive end. He was jumping off sides all the time. He looked out of place. It looked like they were running at him effectively. And I give credit also, Steve, for the fact that he went from that starting point to by the end of the season, he was probably as good a defensive player as there is in the country. He showed the willingness to work at it and get better at it. And that, to me, would also be important as an NFL GM.
Absolutely. You want guys who are coachable and, you know, that can process what you're trying to teach them. I know that sounds simple, but I mean, you've seen it through over the course of many seasons. Some guys just can't translate what you're trying to teach them onto the field. And I think that bodes really well. And I hope the guy makes a lot of money, has a long, successful career in the NFL.
Yes, he obviously has the talent level for it. I have no doubt. He's obviously going to be a very high pick. Now, on the other side, the other defensive end, Danai Dennis-Sutton, who I think we've all been waiting for him to raise his performance level, a lot of expectation for him. I think not only did we see it throughout this game, but to have a defensive end drop back in coverage and make the interception that he did, you do not expect a defensive lineman to make that kind of play, Steve. You know how when these players go to the combine and they perform athletically and it raises their stock because it's like, wow, that's the capability I didn't know he had. Jumping ability, speed, quickness, all of those things. Well, oh my goodness. Danai Dennis-Sutton, forget the combine. You just showed that athletic ability on that one play alone.
Absolutely. Having the ability to do it, going actually demonstrating it in the game and to make that catch makes me wonder, given all the problems they had with wide receiver, maybe they should have put him on that side of the ball.
That would be interesting. How about as another tight end lining up on the other side of Tyler Warren?
Dennis-Sutton's one I'm sort of curious whether or not he's going to come back, because I think in some ways he benefited from playing with Carter, as anybody would, given the attention is going to be probably paid more to him than to Carter than to Dennis-Sutton. So I'd like to see him come back, but he'd also, you know, be able to sort of rush from that blind side and maybe rack up some additional sacks and stats, and maybe he improves his draft pick. I mean, the number of guys who have to make big decisions, I think, is going to determine a lot of how excited we should be for next year's team. And, you know, there's a big difference in terms of your pay range, whether you're going to be sort of a first day pick, second day pick versus those later round picks. So, you know, I think that's sort of what I'm watching for moving forward.
Well, in a day and age, too, with NIL, where you have a Carson Beck making $4 million in college, you know, and I want to talk to you more about that in the fourth quarter, where this team goes from here. But let's finish up on the team itself. Another guy, speaking of coming back, that's Zaki Wheatley, just had a monster game. 16 tackles, the interception, a sack, very impressive performance.
Yeah, my fear going in again was that they were going to have trouble defending the run. They exceeded my expectations. I do think they get a little tired in the third quarter, but I think that's obviously where the team has improved. And so to have those guys coming back, as many of them, I think gives you more encouragement for next year. And I think that's a really important step in the development, particularly when you're going to go up against teams that just have a different style, like Michigan, that are really going to try to prioritize that. To be able to have some sort of answer for that is really important. Where I was sort of, I guess, despite it's a difficult spot. I mean, clearly Notre Dame was picking on Colby King in the passing game. He was somebody that needed to be out there to help defend that run, and Notre Dame knew that, and they were trying to isolate him, whether it was on a back or a tight end. And that's a tough spot to be in if you're the middle linebacker. I don't know why Allen was slow to try to address that when he saw what Notre Dame was doing. That was something, unfortunately, you know, I think could have been improved upon. And I started to wonder, too, it looked like Notre Dame was maybe delaying the handoff a little bit in the third quarter. And we're talking about some of the speed maybe working against you. The guys like Tony Rojas, 13, like just running himself sort of out of the play. Coachable moments, things to improve upon. But, you know, again, that second-level tackling had been the concern, honestly, for most of the season. And it sort of showed itself in this game, too.
You brought up Colby King, and yes, that was obviously something that I give credit to Notre Dame's coaching staff to create that mismatch. That, you know, this is what we talk about with Penn State trying to get the wide receivers open. Could you scheme them open? That was Notre Dame scheming somebody open.
Right. I mean, credit to Notre Dame's coaches. They made good halftime adjustments And that's really, we talk about working Penn State and these coaches under Franklin make improvement. It's being able to adjust, not only identify the adjustments, but also make them quickly. And I think overall as a team, the coaches seem to be better at that maybe years past. That said, I think there's still, you know, room for improvement. Everything's like chess. You know, there's a counter to everything that's being done out there. You just have to be able to not only identify what that is, but then get your team to execute it. And maybe that's an area for improvement for next year.
And I think it's important to, in the assessment of Kobe King, I don't put that on him so much. Remember, he got isolated with no help from safeties behind him.
That's my criticism of Allen. Like, you shouldn't be – once it happens once or twice, you can't let the Notre Dame continue to go after it, that vulnerability. And you're right. I mean, at that point, you need to make some sort of adjustment there in the back so you're not just isolating King. So it's not necessarily a criticism of him. It's just, unfortunately, Notre Dame saw something that was working. They kept going to it, and it took Allen too long to stop it.
Let's take a look at this season, though, overall. It's James Franklin and – I don't think it was the smartest thing in the world for him to say it, although I think there's a lot of truth to it. After the game, he gave there's 128 teams out there who wish they were where we are, making a Final Four. He's probably right. However, that's not a good look from James Franklin. It feels defensive and self-serving. And I'd rather somebody else say it, not James, after the game. But with that said, there is some truth to it. This does mark an improvement from prior season. This is making the Final Four, Steve. So how important was that for this program?
I wrestle with both, you know, the idea that the season was both a success and a disappointment. I mean, it was a success in that you won the games you were supposed to. And we can talk about what doing what you're supposed to, whether or not that really is successful, but you made it to the Final Four. That was something that eluded this team for a long time, and making it to the playoffs just in general. So I think just being able to say, you know, hey, we've checked that box for a playoff team, not only that, but we've got to the Final Four, the semifinals. I think that's an important talking point moving forward. That said, you know, they benefited from a very favorable path. Let's just be honest. I mean, playing SMU and Boise State, we talked about sort of shifting the goalposts there. It's like playing one group of five team, one team that was just group of five team, I think the season or two before. So, you know, can you really take credit for beating up on those teams? You were double digit favorites to beat. Not really. I mean, I think that's where the disappointment element comes in is, you know, at the end of the day, you beat all the teams you were supposed to, and you lost all the teams that you were an underdog to. And I think with Notre Dame in particular, it was a pretty favorable matchup, even though they might have been a point and a half, by the time of kickoff, favored to win. And you let it get away. And I think that's going back to where we started the conversation. It's just narrative that, you know, Franklin can't win the big games. And, you know, unfortunately, it's on him to change that narrative. And he had a good opportunity and he just didn't take advantage of it.
And I think the other part to it, and we hit on this a little bit before, is Drew Aller now has to carry that burden with him also, I think. And I'm one of Drew Aller's biggest fans, okay? I even think during the season they didn't use him enough. I think he was good enough. But you start to compile those statistics from the what you'll call the big games, and boy, the numbers just aren't there for him.
No, and talking about NFL GMs, you know, looking at Carter, I mean, that's the same thing with Aller. Basically, when you play NFL quality defenses, guys with rosters, a lot of guys are going to play in the NFL, good college defenses, your numbers are very poor. And big game Drew is now a thing. And the quarterback position, maybe second only to the kicker, if even that, is just so much about mental between the ears. Can you process things and putting things like that behind you? And that's sort of what I wonder about Aller coming back next year. You know, Penn State fans aren't going to forget this, I don't think. I'm not saying they're not willing to give him a shot, but, you know, if he starts throwing a couple picks when Oregon comes to town and first Big Ten game at Beaver Stadium next year, how are you going to process that? You know, I don't know. I mean, this is going to last with him a long time, and I hope he can learn from it. But right now, big game Drew is just based on the record. It is very much a thing.
All right. That's the last word for quarter three. We're going to talk future when we come back in quarter four. Stay tuned.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. It's quarter number four of our show. We spent the first three quarters kind of going over that disappointing loss against Notre Dame. Now it's time to look forward a little bit. And Steve, how old are you?
43.
What are your memories of the 94 season, the 86 season, 82 season? Any memory at all of those?
Don't make 94. Me do no, math. No, no, 94. I remember pretty well. That's one of these like early seasons where I can actually remember like almost like each game, the outcome. Obviously, the Illinois drive, the Rose Bowl, Kachana Carter, Ting at the House. That's one of sort of like the first sort of Penn State season I can recall, you know, pretty much the entire thing, just being so into sports. 86, 82, obviously 82, you know, I think I was a year old, but, and then 86, still pretty young. I actually had those DVDs that they're fun to watch back and look at hindsight. You were talking about put this game in perspective. My fear is that this game is going to be like the 79 game against Alabama with the goal line stand, that you're going to have, you know, Notre Dame people just replaying this game on endless loop. And you know, that took a toll on that 80 team, I believe, after the 79 season. But then I look at the 86 season. You know, I think the 85 team, if I recall correctly, sort of exceeded expectations. A lot of younger players, a lot of them came back. And obviously they went on to have a very successful following year, undefeated, beating Miami. Still most viewed game, I believe, of all time, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm not sure where you're going with this, Jim, but that's well, that's my recollection.
All right. Being 40-something, I was going to school you because of your youth, okay? You're just a youth. You're a pup. And what I was going to suggest is take a look back at the 93 season, the 85 season, the 81 season, and even 79. And these games, these seasons ended up in heartbreak. But what they did was they led their way to the next step. It was almost as if, you know, Penn State had to get on the, just on the doorstep and get turned away before the following year they made things happen. And if you go, you know, 93, some heartbreaking losses, 85 in the Orange Bowl. They were playing for the national championship against Oklahoma. I think it was in 93 with Kerry Collins. I remember him making like the worst interception in the world that he threw. He was trying to throw it away and threw an interception. And it's a question of, can they come back from that? And between segments, you and I were talking a little bit about Drew Aller and coming back. And I think you were essentially saying, gee, would he be essentially an NIL darling? Just hum. I still think the narrative of Drew Aller can still be a good one. And the redemption, you mentioned Oregon will be the first big game next year at home. That's an opportunity to change the narrative very, very quickly. If he has a big game against Oregon next year and the team wins, we'll always remember this game against Notre Dame, but we'll change our feelings about Drew Aller.
We will if he delivers. I mean, that taste that you sort of alluded to in those seasons before the successful seasons was enough to motivate these teams coming back. We'll see. I mean, this is a different era, different players. You know, I think the thing is just how many of these guys are actually coming back? You know, if more and more start to come back, I think there's more reason for hope, obviously. If not, then, you know, it's really not necessarily the same team. It's going to have a lot of new players the following year. But for Aller, I mean, just so much of this position is really between the years. And I just don't know what his psyche is like right now. And he does have opportunities to change that next year. But if he goes out in Oregon and he throws some bad picks and costs them the game, it could go the other direction. Things get real bad real fast. So, you know, I hope as a Penn State player, somebody I like Drew, I hope he, I don't know him, but I'm rooting for him. I was disappointed. I'm sure he's a lot more disappointed than I am. But, you know, I just, it's uncertain heading into next season.
Well, I think the important thing is, though, he has the opportunity to change that narrative. And I'll point this out, Steve. I think Drew Aller has already shown the ability to improve. Now, as an underclassman in high school, he was not this number one recruit. He was not that highly regarded. And fortunately for Penn State, that's the case. For a kid coming from the state of Ohio, had he been this highly rated as an underclassman, I'm sure he would have Ohio State would have been on him a lot earlier. But he showed that ability to improve in high school. I also think there's no doubt, if you're being fair, there was great improvement year two from year one for Drew Aller. My point being, he seems to be a kid willing to put in the work to get better. He's going to need to do that again, but I think the capability is there for him, Steve.
But that's also the frustration. I mean, we saw in Boise State, he made some phenomenal NFL throws. And then for a lot of the game, you're just missing guys that were wide open. He misses Nicholas Singleton. The guy was wide open. It couldn't have been any easier than that. You would yell at a seven-year-old for missing that pass. So don't tell me about the capability. You just can't go out there and do it. And then the last throw of the game, I mean, things are real bad when you can't even throw the ball away. I mean, let's just be honest, okay? So that's where I go back to he has all the tools. There aren't really questions of that. And he shows at times great promise, things that would get NFL scouts to salivate. But it's, can you consistently go out there and do it? And when it's not a question of ability, it just comes back to what's that mindset? And that's my fear. I mean, yes, there's opportunity for him to go out there and grow. And I agree with you. He did improve from last year to this year. But at this point, I don't know that we can expect as much of a progression going from year two into year three. Again, I hope I'm wrong. I think the other thing to remember, too, is Aller benefited tremendously. That's where you go back to, did you squander this opportunity from having two great running backs and a great offensive line there with Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen? You know, they both come back. It's a different season because you can sort of, you know, lean on them. Defenses have to respect that. And that should open things up for a receiving core that average at best and is probably going to be that way next year. You're going to lose Tyler Warren, but I think there's enough depth at wide receiver that, you know, you shouldn't really worry that being an area of concern. But it's going to be a different team if you don't have Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton back, you know? And right now, the portal doesn't seem to have solved all the problems at wide receiver either. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Well, I'm more optimistic about next season now than I was previously. I really thought, okay, this year, the window's still open, okay? And I was fearful that window would close. And they are, without a doubt, we already know players like Abdul Carter's gone. We know Tyler Warren is gone. But there's what we do know returning, I think it's important that to this team that Drew Aller is back. We've got the announcement already. Zane Durant is coming back, which I think is huge. There are a lot of other names, though. This team could be very different depending on which of those players come back. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about Denai Dennis Sutton. And the narrative in college football has changed, Steve, where we saw with Ohio State from last year to this year, many of those players who were NFL players chose to come back. And let's face it, a big part of that is the NIL money. I mentioned earlier, Carson Beck. He's making $4 million to come back. That's more money than he would have made in the NFL. And you now have these players. I'll mention, like, Kobe King, for example, who perhaps he, you know, learned a lesson with his brother going to the NFL and not working out so well. But Kobe King doesn't look like a first or second day draft pick. Does it become actually financially beneficial for several of these players to stick around for another season?
I think so. And I think you're sort of seeing that, you know, as you mentioned, not just unique to Penn State, but across college football. I mean, guys now sort of making a financial decision. Okay, maybe it is in my interest to come back and play another year. And if I can get moved from being sort of a fourth or fifth round guy to maybe a high third round, second round guy, that's a significant amount of money. So you know, I can sort of understand the financial picture that these guys are being presented with. And I think Penn State, for the most part, from what I hear, does a pretty good job of just being honest with these guys and giving them a draft assessment. You know, here's where you're sort of projected to go, and here's sort of what the salary ranges you can expect. So, you know, this is what you're projected this year versus if you come back, you could maybe go at a higher round next year. It wouldn't surprise me. I just don't know at the end of the day how many of these guys are going to reach that conclusion.
Well, I think that there's some examples now. I mentioned, you know, Kalen King, who it probably was not in his best interest to go to the NFL. But you also have a guy like Tyler Warren, who he was good enough, you know, to go to the NFL last year. He was. And we as Penn State fans who watch every single play, we probably could have predicted he was going to be pretty good coming back another year. I don't think anybody expected what we saw, but there's a great example. He made himself a lot of NFL money by coming back. And might deny Dennis Sutton be a similar kind of guy. I think he's good enough to go to the NFL, but sticking around another year might make him lots of money.
Yeah, I mean, for Dennis Sutton, I think you're talking about maybe being like bottom second round, third round to being a potential first rounder like Carter. And that's generational money. So I think you could make a case for that. But again, that said, there's a risk too. I mean, obviously there's always a risk of injury. There's a risk where because teams are focused so much on Carter, he looked better. So if the attention shifts to him, is that going to actually cost him money? You know, I don't know. These are things that he's going to have to evaluate with his family and his advisors. But it's just a different landscape now. And I just, you know, think about NIL. That's one of the, again, missed opportunities here is, you know, had Penn State won this game, I would just imagine be that much more enthusiasm amongst the NIL donors and the like. I'm not saying necessarily deflated because I think it was a successful season, just the fact he made it to the semifinal game. But, you know, becoming clear, you're going to have to pay to play. And that's just think about as being a fan. It's pretty demanding. I mean, the season tickets now and you being asked to travel for all these bowl games, new stadium renovation, now to pay to keep the team. I mean, you know, people make a lot more money than me, I guess, that can help finance all these things, but it's expensive.
Well, it does feel, though, like Penn State is getting better at that. If you're going by the reactions, you know, from James Franklin, Pat Kraft, it feels like they are getting more of those donations. And, you know, I just look at some of those donations for this stadium. $5 million, $10 million. I hope whoever's doing those donations is saving a few of those dollars for the players to come back. All right, Steve, that's the last word. Thank you all for joining us. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.